GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Spring Hill School, where small classes and individually paced programs of learning develop students' potential. Hosting a science fair and open house Tuesday evening from 6:30 to 8 o'clock. More information at springhillschool.org. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Dr. Henry J. Ramirez, DDS, in Santa Cruz, specializing in handcrafted dentistry from start to finish using digital technology for less radiation and offering one appointment, crowns and veneers. Information is at RamirezDDS.com. It's Saturday, February 4th, 2012. We are broadcasting live from Santa Cruz on the central coast of California. This is KUSP Public Radio. In the first half of GeekSpeak, we will cover geek news. In the second half, take your calls and questions and comments about technology. It's time now for GeekSpeak. Welcome to GeekSpeak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Miles Elam. Please keep in mind that the views expressed during GeekSpeak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today's theme is by Michael Newman of Pet Star Music. As always, our theme songs are Creative Commons, share and share alike. If you have a theme song that you want to share with us and have us play on air, send it off to us and we'll give it a shot and see if we want it. And if we do like it, we will play it as a new theme. I am not Lyle Troxell. Lyle Troxell's away. I'm Miles Elam. In the air room with me are Ben Jaffe, a freelance instructor and media guy.
Is this mic on?
I don't know that it is. Try it again. Wait, try the other mic.
Hello, hello. There we go. This is an exciting morning, huh?
Yes, it's a new board.
I'm Lyle Troxell. Board, yeah. No, I'm Lyle Troxell.
No, I'm Lyle Troxell.
There we go.
Yeah. God, we're a bunch of geeks.
Yes, and the person who is speaking right now is Jordan Hart, Technical Director at Digital Media Academy.
Welcome. All right, fine. I'm not Lyle Troxell. Morning, Miles.
And so let's start off with some news and pretend that this whole
let's pretend never happened. This whole thing never happened. No. So yeah, I guess I'll start out, if that's okay. I want to talk about spiders, because spiders are pretty... scary and awesome. I don't know.
Spiders aren't scary. Come on.
You know, I don't... Is that, like, built into our... I don't know, something really, really deeply embedded in us, like, to be scared of spiders?
To worry about creepy crawlies, because things that bite you can hurt you, but just to be intrinsically scared of spiders, like, I think that's learned.
I am not scared of pill bugs. Pill bugs are awesome.
Well, one, pill bugs don't sting you, but also... The thing is, think about beetles. Like, a lot of times people will say, oh my God, like, I don't want that touching me, or a cockroach. I'm like, uh-huh. And cockroaches can't hurt you, but it's part of our culture. But a ladybug, oh, hey, I have 5 ladybugs crawling on my head. Oh, no big deal.
Oh, they're cute. It's okay.
Yeah, so maybe it's that. Anyway, so spiders are pretty cool because they have this spider silk thing going on. And it's actually a really fantastic material. And we've known this for a while. And for a long time, we weren't really able to make anything at all similar, really, to spider silk, you know, because spiders can spin these webs and then they stand up to a lot of abuse. But at the same time, if there are localized disturbances in the web, then it doesn't destroy the rest of the web. So if you were to build a web out of, say, rubber bands or something that was really very elastic, just uniformly elastic, then you would have all kinds of issues. So they were trying to do some modeling to figure out how all the spider silk works and how the webs work and everything, and they actually built a spider web in the computer and modeled it out of entirely elastic threads. And sure enough, when you simulated pulling on one little string, the entire thing, when you let it go, the entire thing oscillated and just like made these crazy waves and then broke in all these different ways, you know. So it's obviously not a good way to build a web. It turns out that spider silk, it has these proteins that are actually scrunched into these folded structures, like scrunched really tightly. And when you pull on them, the spider silk, although it's very strong, it'll actually stretch, right? But it'll stretch only to a certain point, and then it'll become very tough again and stop stretching. So if you pull it beyond that point, then
so
it'll
like a,
just...
So it's like a scrunchie.
It's, well, but scrunchies don't really break, do they?
Well, that's the thing, though. It's like you pull them and they're very easy to bend, but once they hit that terminal point, then it's they become rigid.
That's hard true. Yeah. And so if you imagine from there, it becomes rigid and kind of brittle, and then it'll actually break. It's almost self-sacrificial in a way if you were to anthropomorphize the spider silk, right? one little thread will sacrifice itself for the...
thread that was a hero.
for the rest
takes
of the
web. Takes
it for
the team.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, and of course, I think this is a cool name. The proteins, when they untie all the way and unknot all the way and untangle, they reconfigure into these structures that are that scientists called beta sheet nanocrystals, which sounds so interesting. And
what else would they be called?
I don't know. I mean, you know.
Neither did they, apparently.
Yeah, so they actually did some tests as well on actual spider webs with the spider on the web. I kind of feel bad for the spider, but they hung teeny tiny little weights from various places of the web. And the other thing that they found is that as you break these individual threads, the trap, the entire web will actually retain its original strength even after sometimes up to 10% or more of the little spokes of the web are broken. The web still has a very similar strength to when it was fully intact. So it's pretty amazing. I mean, you know, if humans could build things like this, I don't know.
There'd be no war.
There'd be oh my gosh, it'd be amazing. So we have a lot to learn from spiders. That's ultimately what I'm saying. And the article will be up at some point in time on geekspeak.org. So you guys can look at it yourself.
Our site is not up, and we will deal with that as time permits. So yes, just bear with us. I actually have something to talk about with regard to spider silk.
Do you?
Just because it just came up. someone has created a rug, a blanket rug out of spider silk from a golden orb spider.
A full rug?
Yes.
How big is this rug? Is
or
this
it's
like
a cloth? Yeah, it's a cloth.
Wow. What are they using it for?
It's 11.
Getting lunch?
In answer to your first question, it's 11 feet by 4 feet.
Oh my gosh, that's huge. Like you could wrap yourself up in that like a cocoon and then get trapped.
Blood sucked or something.
Mm-hmm. No, made by golden orb spiders. And in fact, golden orb spiders that are wild. In other words, they didn't like just take a whole bunch of them and breed them in captivity. The problem with breed them in captivity is that spiders tend to eat each other.
Yeah.
So, and that doesn't really do well for your stocks.
Like, right.
Your thread stocks.
Your thread stocks or your business stocks if you're making spider silk webs. And then.
Yes. So what they did was they had people go out and gather these golden orb spiders. They had to find people that were okay with gathering spiders. And you were talking about that fear. Some people have a fear of it. Some people don't seem to have that same fear.
I would have too much empathy for the spiders. It just seems mean.
Well, no. As a matter of fact, it turned out that when they got the female golden orb spiders, when they had them held down, they didn't fight or rustle. They just kind of like sat there. And then they were pulling out the silk, and they were able to farm it out, and then they let the spiders go afterwards. And after a week or two, they
took a survey, found that the spiders were actually doing just fine.
Yeah, well, after a week or two, they were actually able to find the same crop of spiders. So the same spider, after a week or two, had all of their stocks back again, or about a week.
Nice.
And so they're able to just, you know, milk them, as if you will, and you know, bring them back. And they had 70 people spending 4 years collecting these spiders.
To make this rug?
Off of telephone poles in Madagascar.
Gosh. Wow.
It took over 1 million spiders in total. I don't know if they were counting duplicates.
You know? Yeah.
So I was wondering about that. A million sessions of farming it out. Yeah. And this, just following up with your story, spider silk is pound for pound stronger than steel.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just a, think of like when you have a silk cloth, how strong that is, and then think that it's much stronger when it's spider silk.
Yeah.
Much more flexible and much stronger overall.
Yeah. Which is why, I don't know, occasionally there are the movies where, you know, there are spider webs everywhere and the person is running through the cave with the spider webs and then they get trapped in the spider webs. and as a kid, I couldn't understand how, like, how could a person get trapped in a spider web, you know, because we can just bat at them with our hands and poof, they're gone, you know, but
if they're small enough.
But I know, but like if you have an entire archway or something, I don't know.
Yeah. And also, just to let you know, this this cloth, which, as I said before, is 11 feet by 4 feet, weighs 2.6 pounds.
Wow. Wait, so again, though, does it say in the article what they're using this for? Or did they just make it for kicks?
No, they were making it just to see if it could be done. People have used silk from silkworms before, but it doesn't have the same strength.
Is there a picture of it?
Yes, there is. It's on a Wired article, and I wish that the website were up, but I can try to put it up somehow. Sooner or later, it will show up on geekspeak.org once we get our act together.
Yeah. Is it? I mean, can you describe what it looks like? I'm really curious. Does it look like, can you see
it looks
through
like
it?
A golden rug
knitted? Oh my God! It looks like a real rug.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Like a rug that you would buy in the store.
Yes.
It's not translucent.
And no,
it's got a design.
No, it's a perfectly opaque but golden in color.
Huh. Wow.
And they would take just like the silk from the spider, and then weave it with other. Or spin it with other threads of that spider silk and, you know, spin it a little bit more, and then you weave it in there, and then you make a yarn, basically, and then you weave with it.
So do you wash that on delicate, or?
I would imagine that it's pretty safe to wash.
It's got tassels, too.
Yeah, but I would imagine it'd be pretty safe to wash, considering
steel.
That, yeah, well, not just that, but because spider silk in general is... You know, you see spider's silk always has those beads of water on it, and it's like, yeah, whatever, it's water impermeable.
Now, but if you were to manipulate it in the wrong way, would you trigger its mechanism that makes it go brittle? I mean, would that be possible?
Well, I'm sure if you pulled it long enough. But then again, if you pull on any cloth hard enough, you're going to cause it to break.
I see.
You know, most thread has some set of elasticity, and then... breakage.
So talking about all of this, it made me realize that I have this perception of spider silk is very, very sticky. I imagine it must be to catch flies, right? Or is it just
not
that they get
them.
Entangled?
No.
Spiders, we have a spider silk expert.
Yes, spiders can actually spin many types of spider silk that some would be sticky, some would be slippery.
So do you ask the spider nicely? Can you?
No, I'm sure they treat it, actually, to make sure that it doesn't stick. Although, I don't know if sticking might help with the initial
It would be
spinning.
Difficult to if you were knitting, or never mind.
No, but they have machines, actually, where you put multiple sewing. Spiders together, and you're able to have this hand-crank machine that gets the thread from all of them at once.
With the spiders in them?
Yeah. Well, where else are you? You're
Do they give them free
the
pizza
spiders.
Or something? I still feel bad for these spiders. I mean, like, this is that they're like, oh man, a whole day gone, you know?
Well, you know, it is a bit of an adventure because golden orb spiders do bite, and those bites hurt.
Are they poisonous? Or
yes, but they're not dangerous to humans. I mean,
they just really
all
hurt.
Spiders' venom is poisonous. It's just the question of whether or not it's poisonous and it's sufficient quantities and toxicity for us.
Yeah. Wow.
I mean, I'm sure all flies would consider any spider's venom as toxic.
Have you asked them?
No, I haven't asked
them. See, you're making all kinds of assumptions about these spiders and the flies, and I don't know.
It's... Yes, and when you assume,
okay.
It means that Ben is wrong. So.
Nice.
Which means that we segue over
because
to you.
Because I said
Jordan.
So.
Yes.
Well, the Sun just crowned Britain's oldest gamer, a 100-year-old lady who's lost both of her legs and was given a Nintendo DS 4 years ago. And she's found it to be like an integral part of her life now. Keeps her mind sharp. She feels it's part of why her mind isn't slipping as she gets older. And has just become like a source of joy. And
really? Because I could swear that I've heard many different news stories talk about how excessive video game use is... dulling our child's minds, and
I wonder
lies all lies.
I wonder how much which video games you play has have to do with that. I'm sure
She does play brain exercise games in particular, so that may make a difference.
Could you get the same kind of benefits by doing Sudoku all the time?
I don't know. At the same time, when I've played games, even if they were things like Diablo or Diablo 2, I had my brain working, going like, what is this here? How does this factor in? How is this going to add up to my armor? And I mean, I would if I were a gamer like that, but...
I was actually just rereading in, I think it's the New Horizons report or something. They released a bunch of stuff on the future of education technology, and they were saying it's not in their short-term, like 1 to 2 years projections, but in their midterm, I think like 3 to 5 year projections, they expect games to increasingly come into the educational space, that education games will permeate a lot of education within 5 years, I believe.
Doing that a lot. I remember at work, it was for insurance purposes, of course, like health insurance, but set up a program so that the employees could compete, if you will, with each other to say like, yes, I ate better, I exercised this much,
gamification.
Ate less. Yeah.
That's turning non-game things and using game-type principles and mechanics and things which are not games.
Exactly. And I have to say I lost weight on it, so.
That's very effective. Yeah, I heard a really interesting quote about gamification, that games are the only way to make masses of people act predictably without force.
Hmm. Wow.
So now it's being used in...
Wow, that's...
that's all I got.
So...
That's the end of my contribution to this conversation. I'm sorry.
Pretty soon your employer is going to have a leaderboard for, you know, who's serving him the best.
Okay, Ben, you got a story?
Wow. yes. So have you guys heard of Rovio? Or I guess I should ask, have you guys heard of Angry Birds? I'm sure most people who have any kind of smartphone have probably heard of Angry Birds. If you haven't heard of it, you've probably seen it. It's this game where you launch these birds at these pigs who are behind barricades of wooden blocks and ice and stone. And
now what about these pigs? I mean, did anyone do a little survey and make
sure
green
that pigs.
They're not... That they're not upset, or
they're
know.
Fictional characters. They're pixel art.
How Hitchcockian.
So anyway, they have become one of the most popular. I don't know if they are the most popular game or ever were. At
they
some
definitely
point.
Were.
They definitely were. Yeah, they were. I mean, I see people playing it everywhere. It was one of the very few games that I personally find compelling, because I tend to not really find games compelling. Also, they are competing with the amount of people. With the time that people spend in that application, in Angry Birds, in that game, it's competing with the most popular television shows in the United States in terms of time spent in the game. Like, that's pretty profound.
I mean, with regard to games, I guess I prefer that one to what used to be the top game on the iPhone App Store a couple of years ago. Well, actually, in the UK, it was the CIA Factbook. In the U.S., however, it was the Moron Test.
Wow.
that's also profound. Showing differences. Anyway, so...
Did you pass?
did you pass?
I never took it. I was afraid.
That's right. Oh, God. There was an episode of Geek Speak maybe 2 or 3 years ago where you were like, okay, I'm going to ask you guys... It's like Lyle and me and I don't remember who else, and you were like, okay, I'm gonna ask you guys some questions about the Senate and Congress, and I was like, oh boy, it's gonna be bad, because you were asking us to answer on the air, and I just don't know that stuff, not the way I should, at least. Anyway,
I don't
know
the basic fundamentals of our government. Yeah, I would see how you would have a problem with that.
Ouch. Okay, so but this story isn't just about Angry Birds being popular. This is actually about their company, Rovio's, their stance on piracy. Actually, they are one of the few companies that you find saying, no, actually, piracy is kind of fine with us. I mean, it expands the amount of people playing the game, you know? Actually, here's the exact quote. I really like this quote from the chief executive named Michael Head. He said, "We could learn a lot from the music industry and the rather terrible ways the music industry has tried to combat piracy." Like, basically, they're piracy. Embracing it. Piracy. Thank you. I'm having issues today.
That would be Facebook.
You're right.
That would be the music industry too, but that's a whole other conversation.
So basically, they're kind of, I mean, they're obviously not they're not doing anything to make people pirate their game, but they're not trying to actively combat it except in situations where it would actually hurt their brand. Like in Asia, there are a lot of people who are selling Angry Birds merchandise and things like that, which are not through Rovio, you know, so that's potentially lost income. But at the same time, it gets more people in the game, and they have all kinds of other ways of monetizing these games. Basically, and the other thing that I found very interesting is that he said that they stopped treating the customers as users and started treating the customers as fans. And they were saying, yeah, we do that today. We talk about how many fans we have as opposed to how many users we have. Which I think is a really interesting paradigm shift. It's a subtle thing, you know, but it's moving away from like how many people are using this app, how many people have bought it, how many people are you know, doing it that way.
It's more social. It's more like intrinsically social.
Yeah, exactly. And I think for a game like that, you have to be really, you have to have your pulse on that, you know, or your hand on the pulse of that. I'm mixing my metaphors.
Now, speaking of piracy and combating it.
Yes, sir.
I have a story that's about a company known as Ubisoft. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure any gamer out there has probably heard of them, that they've played games in the last 5 years.
Indeed.
This explains why I haven't heard of them and why both of you have.
But they have games such as like Assassin's Creed, Splinter Cell,
okay,
Settlers, let's see, Tom Clancy's Hawks 2, Might and Magic, Heroes, you know, things like that. Well, if you've bought any of those games in recent years, you may have known about some of the DRM that they have, the digital rights management, which means that you have to have an internet connection, you have to register that game with your user ID or the serial number in order to play that game. That it's not just for multiplayer, that's also for the single player versions as well. Well, curious wrinkle about this is that with these of Ubisoft's biggest titles, you won't be able to play them next week for an unknown period of time, because Ubisoft is changing the server locations, the colo locations for their servers, and so their DRM servers are going to be down, which means that game that you bought will be unplayable while they do the migration. Which is telling in of itself that they can't do a smooth migration, like they can't do a database dump and then have them both running and then switch the DNS over. And,
right.
But also the fact that you purchase this game, but you're not allowed to play it.
Yeah.
For, you know, as far as they deem available. And it also brings up the point that if anything ever happened to Ubisoft, if they suddenly went bankrupt or, you know, something happened, then you have a whole bunch of games that you purchased that you cannot play ever again.
Interesting. Yeah, you don't really own it.
Yeah, which would be a curious thing, too, if their database ever got wiped, too. Because then you, like, how would you re-register? And how would you prove that you're a customer? And do you have the original discs anymore? And
you know, I wonder if they actually have plans for that. Or if they're just, oh, that'll never happen, you know?
Probably the latter, yeah.
Which is sad.
But we'll see how it works out.
It actually reminds me of an interesting quote I heard as, you know, the SOPA stuff was floating around, that piracy is really a service problem, that if the media industry were adapting to new media quickly and providing service that exceeded what you can get through piracy, then it wouldn't be a problem. But instead, you know, they just try to lock down the controls and they create a bad user experience. And if a user is going to get a better experience with piracy, they're going to do piracy.
Yeah, that's the ironic thing about those Ubisoft games, the people who have pirated them so that they don't sign in to the servers,
they
won't notice a difference. They will be playing just fine during that week when the people who actually purchased the game are going to be left out in the cold.
Right.
That's amazing. A full week. That's a really long time.
Oh, well, man. I don't know if an indeterminate amount of time. They're saying next week they're going to make the migration. They were notifying their users that they would be offline.
I see.
It's almost worse not knowing. Like, as a gamer, I mean, my big game is StarCraft. If I just suddenly found out I couldn't play StarCraft for some indeterminate amount of time, I'd be furious. If you told me a week, I'd be mad. But I mean, indeterminate, like,
In fairness, I probably think it will be less than a week. Although, yeah. In terms of outage like this, I would think that anything more than an hour or two would be kind of...
Yeah, I could accept an hour or two.
That's like maintenance periods of time for some items. But right. Being off for when you're planning it and then you're offline for over a day, that's a problem.
You would think that they would do something like where if they have to have it checking their server, that they check every 3 days or check every 2 days or something like that, and then just know, oh yeah, I am a legitimate copy because I last checked in on, let's say, February 4th, and then they go offline February 5th through the 6th, then you can still play the game for a couple days, you know, like or some kind of mechanism. It's just surprising to me that they don't have that. But
well, maybe you should suggest that. At any rate, you are listening to GeekSpeak on KUSP. GeekSpeak on KUSP is supported by the UC Santa Cruz Music Department, presenting Indian vocalist Shweta Javuri, performing classical Indian music this evening, 7:30 in the UCSC Music Center Recital Hall. Information online at arts.ucsc.edu/events. GeekSpeak co-sponsors Amnesty International of Santa Cruz County's 27th Annual Spaghetti Dinner and Fundraiser. Saturday evening, February 11th, 6 o'clock at the Live Oak Senior Center in Santa Cruz. Dinner is vegetarian. Auction and raffle follow at 7:30. Information is at 295-9354. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. I'm your host, Miles Elam. With me in the air room are Ben Jaffe and Jordan Hart. We can take your calls and comments on the air. You can call either locally, 831 area code 476-2800, or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. In the meantime, we'll take a few more news stories.
GeekBit?
We got a GeekBit. That's right. Jordan.
I do have a GeekBit for you geeks out there. I have a very tasty little morsel of strategy and advice for you. Match.com has released some interesting statistics that Android users are actually the most likely to have sex on the first date.
I'm sorry. They're what?
Yeah. No, you heard that right. Android users are most likely to have sex on the first date. Thank you to Match.com for releasing the stats. To be specific, that 62% of Android owners will have sex after one date. By comparison, only 57% of iPhone users, and those prudish BlackBerry users are all the way down at 48%.
Do you know how big this sample was? It was fairly big, right? Because
Match.com's pretty big. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. But also, that's self-reported statistics.
Well, it probably assumes the people who are using
right.
the app.
And I mean, yeah, these people are probably a little optimistic. I mean, they're
perhaps.
So willing to is the key.
I see. I have a quick geek bit too. Okay. Monty Python. We all know and love Monty Python. If you don't, well, you should.
Who are they?
Comedy what? Group from the past.
Yeah,
and
England. Never heard of them. Now for something completely different.
And very, very good. And the present now, because they are releasing a new movie. They're going, or rather, they've confirmed nice. That a sci-fi farce is in development, and it's on track to be released sometime in the future. They don't have a release date yet, but it's going to have all of
a
the
sci-fi
old
sci-fi farce sometime in the future.
Uh huh.
Nice.
I'm talking about Star Wars Episode One. No.
I don't know what you're talking about. There were only 3 Star Wars movies.
Yeah. Okay. You can believe that.
I do believe that. Because it's the truth.
Okay, great.
It's your truth.
That's great. Define truth. But, so it's going to have all of the old Monty Python members who are still alive, and they'll all be getting together.
Which will be all of them except for Graham Chapman.
Exactly. So John Cleese, Terry Gilliam, Michael Palin, they're all signed in. Eric Idle is not confirmed yet, but hopefully he will be.
He's got nothing
because, yeah, I mean, like, what's he going to do? Eric Idle's awesome. And because he's awesome, he has to do this. He has an obligation.
Yes.
Are you listening, Eric Idle, to GeekSpeak? Because that would make me really happy. You should do that.
Putting pressure on you.
Yeah, right. You know, I'll bet this is all part of a big joke or something. He's actually just waffling and for some punchline sometime in the future.
So, speaking of listening, we have a phone call from Santa Cruz. Mike, you're on the air.
Mike or Chuck?
Oh, I'm sorry, Chuck.
Hi. Well, hi, geeks. I want to know the best way to set up my music on my home network. I use Sonos around my house, and up till now I've been having my music on one particular computer on a disc on that computer, except that computer has to be on. I also have a network drive I could put it on, or my router has a USB port for having a disc attached to that, and it supports UPnP. And I want to know, should I be using this UPnP? Would it be better to have my music on a network drive or on this drive attached to my router?
Yeah, that's a good question, because there are definitely a lot of ways to go about it.
Yeah, I mean, UPnP works as long as you have something that can receive the signal
I can barely hear you guys.
Oh, terribly sorry. UPnP would definitely work as long as you have something that can take that UPnP signal, so a compatible receiver or TV or something like that.
I'm not sure how that works. What, the TV then controls it? I mean, how do you like select the songs using
that's,
that?
You're streaming the information to that device. It's okay. Streaming to that output device. And you can have some control over, yeah, there's the selection controls from there. But, let's see, what would be the best way? There's so many different ways to do this. It's really hard to narrow down.
Do you
down.
Have like different speakers throughout your house? Like you have different, like you can turn it on in different parts of the house?
Yeah, with the Sonos system, I can turn on different areas of the house and, you know, access potentially different streams in different areas. Not that I normally do that.
Oh, interesting.
Or, you know, internet radio or whatever. But
what is it you don't?
I've never used this UPnP, and I don't know if it's, you know, any different than just having the disk available on the network, or I don't really know what this UPnP provides. It's some kind of additional audio and video protocol to plug and play.
Well, you already have a system that seems like it works as long as your computer has to be on, right?
Is that the main downside for you? Is that the thing you'd like to change? Is you don't want to have to have a computer on and dedicated?
Yeah.
To this?
So I'm sure if I just move the stuff to my network drive or this one connected to the router, that would solve that problem.
But right. Then it's still going to take some power. It's still going to take some power. It's just going to be you're hoping to have it less than a full desktop system.
Less than what?
Than a full desktop system or a laptop or whatever their case may be.
It sounds to me like both options would work just fine. As far as the pros and cons, I'm not sure.
Just because I don't know the Sonar system. A Sonar system. So that I don't know for sure, so I can't really comment per se. If you were willing to spend some money, there are also low-power computers that take up like 10 watts of power.
What about, is there a difference between just like a network, a hard drive, and hooking up a drive to the router?
Yes, the router acts as a computer. But many times those routers will end up being very fixed function. There's not much in the way of configurability.
It wouldn't just act like a shared drive, though? I mean, like a
it
NAS,
depends upon
basically?
The router. Some routers do. Some routers actually have some intelligence to them to play out, as the caller is saying, in UPnP.
Okay, I see.
There's so many different variables there. It's hard for me to say specifically how to handle your case, unfortunately.
Now, but if you plug the hard drive into the router, you've still got to have, like, what are you going to use as your music player, right? Like, I mean, still need a computer.
Yeah,
that's what the
UPnP device.
What's that? What device is he using?
Well, UPnP is a protocol, and so you would have a transmitter, and then you'd have a receiver for it. Okay. And it goes over a network, like, it can go over Wi-Fi, and I've seen other ones that are just a near-field radio communication. But
yeah, I don't know if it's faster to access the stuff on a network drive or through a drive that's connected to the router.
Speed is not really an issue. As long as the audio is coming through, it's kind of like when engineers ask, if someone says, like, is this fast? I'm like, no, the engineer asks, is this fast enough?
Right.
Like, does it fit my purposes? Because any
is
extra
it gonna
speed
be
on
bottleneck?
Top of that, yeah, any speed on top of that is just going to be, you know, extra speed that you're not using.
Yeah, Yeah, because likely your music library is in, let's say, MP3 or some similarly compressed format. So, I mean, you're just looking at like a megabyte a minute or less that you need to transfer. So pretty much anything will give you that kind of bandwidth. I would personally say just do whatever is easiest. And if it doesn't work, you can try another option. But it seems like both of those options should work just fine.
Yeah, that's our waffling. We don't know, but we still want to sound authoritative. Sorry about that.
But I'll call you back when I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you can tell us.
We'd love to hear what you came up with.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, absolutely.
And share with the community.
Thanks a lot. All right.
Thanks.
Bye. Okay. Oops. I need to drop.
Hello?
Yep.
Who's there?
New board. I'm sorry. Yes, when we were pitching all that time for new equipment, now we have the new equipment, but now we need to learn it. Or I need to learn it. Yeah.
It's a really pretty board. It has all these shiny lights on it.
Yes, but now I know from, I believe it was last week, when Lyle didn't have the theme song running and he had me singing it. Acapella. Now I understand why.
That happens a little too often.
Because I had forgotten that consumer was the block that I should have been using for that audio. And, yes.
But there are 10 things that can go wrong.
As I look up this off-air comment, why don't we take another news story? Whose turn is it?
Is that me?
I believe it's...
Oh, we both did one the last time. I got an interesting one, actually.
Go for it, George.
One I've been actually curious with what you think about, Miles. there's an interesting court ruling in France. A French court ruled against Google. They ruled that it was not appropriate for them to release their maps for free, that it was unfair competition, that simply releasing a mapping service for free stifled competition because those who had arguably a lesser product were also charging for it.
No, on the contrary, this is the same logic that was used with the Internet Explorer and Netscape deal, where you have them using their market in another field and then dumping
a
free product.
Out another one.
Yeah, dumping a free product. I think that, I mean, it was useful for them, but at the same time, it's pretty safe to say that Google, there's a pretty good argument that Google has a monopoly position at this point in some of these areas, so that makes them have to play by different rules.
Right. What's in this case, what would be their monopoly over what? Just like email? Like just that the users are already
maps.
Phones?
Actually, the search and the fact that they get their funding through ads means that they can provide just about any service as long as they put ads on it and then be able to pay for it.
I see.
And so that
but
allows
that's just a different monetization model. I mean,
it is, but the same thing can be said for having Internet Explorer bundled with Windows. It makes Windows more attractive to use and makes it easier for you to track for application developers that are going to be using that Internet Explorer component. Once you have that monopoly position, you have to play by different rules. If they didn't have a monopoly position, they were just a bit player, chances are the EU wouldn't be bothering them. And and for that matter, if Windows didn't have a monopoly position, the Department of Justice wouldn't have filed charges for them for antitrust either.
What should Microsoft have done differently? Just not released a browser?
I believe the issue with Microsoft was the fact that they were bundling it and bundling it for free. So it wasn't even a free download extra. They were actually bundling with the operating system so that it killed any incentive for any other browser manufacturer to be able to get onto it, even if they were making it free, as Netscape was doing for academic or personal use.
So one could draw the parallel that Google is providing the mapping free with the product that they created, as opposed to having to buy it.
Yeah, which does raise an interesting question, because that makes it different, because someone actually has to go to maps.google.com if they're on a browser. If they're going through an Android or an iPhone, however, that makes it so that you have this brand recognition and tying it. It's a...
Yeah.
I think it is worth going through the courts about it. I don't know. I can't really say what I think the correct answer would be.
That is sticky.
It does have some interesting legal implications.
Right.
Ben, you have a story?
I do. So now I want to talk about the moon. Basically, NASA has just released the first video ever of the far side of the moon. So for those of you who don't know, I mean, you see the moon up in the sky, but it always looks the same as far as the geological features that you see on the moon, right? Of course, it changes in the amount of light that hits it and everything. It goes through its different phases and everything. But you'll notice it always kind of looks like either like a very specific kind of lump of cheese, or it always has that same facial expression, whatever you happen to see in the moon, right? And the reason for that is that the moon is actually tidally locked. So as it goes around the Earth, the same part of the moon continuously faces the Earth, you know? So it's very interesting phenomena.
And one of the reasons that Earth can support life as well. It stabilizes absolutely. The wobble and
yeah, the moon does all kinds of cool things for us that nobody gives it credit for. So
but it's okay. Just did.
Well, the moon can't hear us anyway, so it's fine. It's got all this space in between. But NASA just released the first video of the far side of the moon. So that would be the side of the moon that is always facing away from the Earth. Now, that's not the dark side of the moon, right? There actually is no dark side of the moon.
Because, except as a Pink Floyd album.
Of course. There, right. Pink Floyd isn't real. But yeah, so the dark side of the moon is actually just a section of the moon that happens to be dark at any given time, right? That changes, and that's why we see the different phases of the moon. But the far side of the moon, we don't really get to see very often, because in order to see the far side of the moon, we have to send out some kind of probe or some kind of
person.
Did we go? No, I'm kidding. So yeah, the only people who have seen the other side of the moon are the Apollo Apollo astronauts and our various robotic probes and whatnot. So, but the really cool thing about this is the mission that actually took this video. It's currently working on getting its orbit more stable and closer in to the moon. So once it gets to the proper orbit, it's actually going to be used as an educational device for middle schoolers. So there's a project called the MoonCam Project, MoonCam, and it's a project wherein middle schoolers can decide what they want to study on the moon and actually point the instruments at those different areas, like send in requests, and then NASA will actually go through these requests and point the probe at these different parts of the moon and observe it and send back the imagery. So it's a really very interesting way. If you have a kid who's in middle school, you can actually register for this. If you go to MoonCam with a K, of course, .ucsd.edu, or we'll also put it up on the GeekSpeak website. It sounds like a really cool project. It kind of makes me want to just lie and pretend like I'm in middle school. Because, I mean, like, really, like...
Well, you're not that much older.
Right. Thank you. You don't get that much opportunity in your lifetime to point space probes. In fact, you get virtually none. Like, very, very few people on this planet have had that opportunity. So this is a pretty cool project. Okay. So go ahead and check it out. It's pretty awesome.
What's the URL?
MoonCam with a K .ucsd.edu. It's through University of California, San Diego, NASA. Check it out.
And we had an off-air comment. Someone had called in and reminding us that we had an email sent to us. So Mike and Sylvia have a problem, which is that they have AT&T DSL service. They recently purchased it, and suddenly their fax doesn't work. Their all-in-one copier fax. And they haven't been getting much help from AT&T as to what problem it would be. And some people have told them it's because it's a digital line. Actually, an issue there is if it's actually acting as a fax machine, in other words, it has a phone line that goes in and sending as an analog signal, you would need a DSL filter on that. Otherwise, you're going to get all the noise from the DSL line. And for that matter, your DSL line won't work well either. The DSL line uses frequencies on there. It actually is analog, because if you're going over copper, it has to be, although the signal may end up being translated as digital. But you need a filter on that to keep the two separate, the DSL and the analog, which is how a fax machine works, needs to be kept in two different worlds, as it were.
Right. The fax machine goes in the same world as just, you know,
as
the
phone
you just talk on.
Right. At the same time, there may be some issues just because you are lowering the amount of bandwidth available on that line because you have DSL on it. So the amount of signal that you can have what am I trying to think of? The highs and the lows. Come on, help me, guys.
The magnitude?
The dynamic range.
Dynamic range.
Thank you. Okay. is more limited. But also, with this, you may also want to look at fax systems that you can send just through email. Like you send an email and it sends off to a fax machine, then have a number that they call in. They have a particular number they send to, like an extension, and then it'll send you that fax as an email. I know Lyle had a job that did this.
Yeah, there's eFax, my free fax. There's a few services out there I've used. A lot of them are free. Some have, you know, cost a little bit, have some good services.
Right, but at any rate, you would need a filter on that line in order for your fax machine to work correctly. But barring that, the fact that you aren't getting much help from AT&T and they're telling you that it's a third-party issue and it's not their problem, I think is unfortunate. That's a problem with dealing with large companies sometimes. Best of luck to you if that helps. I hope it will. Otherwise, send an email back to us and we'll see if we can get you some more help on that. And in the meantime...
Did you mean frequency range or dynamic range?
With phones? Oh, frequency range. I'm
frequency
sorry.
Range, yeah. Frequency range. Yeah, sure. It's very interesting. That's why you have that very clear, almost sharp tone when you put things through a megaphone or when you put things you play music through a phone system, and it's because you don't have any of the really high highs, you don't have any of the low lows, and you can actually, if you have an equalizer, like a dynamic equalizer, you can simulate that. It's a really interesting effect to create.
Make yourself sound like Cher.
Yeah, you're right. you can even do that with your voice if you like. I'm not going to try, but if you like shape your mouth in a certain way, you can actually kind of at least indicate toward that effect. It's kind of cool.
Okay. Oh, we have another call. We have Ed from Aptos. You're on the air.
We're going backwards now. I feel a little out of date, but
I
called in to sort of comment on with the Google thing.
Uh-huh.
Because this pertains to an awful lot of issues with businesses, but when you're a for-profit business, you can't sell things for less than cost. And I've actually, companies I've contracted to, I've actually had to talk them out of things they wanted to do to stifle competition because I had to let them know that they could get sued or even go to jail for ways they wanted to sell things for less than cost. There are, of course, exceptions to the rule, like giving away samples and other things. You have to go into lots of court cases to figure them out. And the government does not nearly enforce this enough. But
I was about to ask, how does this fit in with Groupon? Because their entire model is selling stuff below cost, or getting companies to sell below cost.
Hmm.
Huh. Yes, but they have to provide their services. They have costs. So it's not profit. It's what money are they making and what are their costs.
Okay. But so it's not Groupon themselves, though. It would be more that Groupon is encouraging the other
companies.
That's
what I mean, like the individual
companies,
right. It's not Groupon. Groupon's making money hand over fist. That's not, they're not having
a
problem there.
But they're encouraging the other companies to basically, I mean, the term is just loss leader, right? Which, but, I mean, I didn't know. Like, are you saying that all loss leaders are illegal?
Well, it's not an ongoing thing.
You have to ask a federal lawyer.
Right.
Statutes, but a lot of them are that it's just not enforced.
I see.
I also know the Sherman antitrust laws mean that if you have a monopoly position, you also have to play by different rules.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I guess, what I was thinking of there. But thank you for the call.
My pleasure.
The other thing about Groupon is you could definitely argue that they're encouraging companies to give away samples at free cost, or at lower than cost. You know, because you buy one Groupon, you can use one Groupon coupon at, let's say, your pizzeria or whatever. But then you can't stack a bunch of them up and use them over and over again. Right.
I'm pretty sure we did that, didn't we? Didn't we get a bunch of pizza from that one pizza place? Didn't we?
No, you bought one and I bought one. And then we bought several pizzas
like
with like a well,
and,
that
and
that
just, and just in case the
wasn't me.
The listener doesn't know, Groupon is a service where companies can go to Groupon and they say for this day only, for example, you can get say you're a muffin shop, you can get muffins for half price all day long, and they'll advertise on the internet, and you'll end up with a huge number of people showing up, and
longer than a day. They'll do it for 2 months at a time or something like that, and you have to buy it through
business.
Yeah, you have to buy it through Groupon, so you have to give Groupon your money,
right?
And then Groupon will pay the business, and they take half or something.
Oh, many times it's more than that, but yeah,
and the of course the discounts are half or more usually, and so that means the business is selling their product for a quarter of cost. So.
Yes. Well, no, they're selling it at, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, half and a half.
Quarter for at least.
I do math good. Yes.
Just good like set. Grammar.
Good set. So I think we have time for one more news story.
You want to go or should I?
Go for it.
Okay. Wait a second.
I'm going to take this one.
Oh, man.
Yeah, because I can just pot you down.
Right, yeah, you have the control of the board.
Excuse me. An 83-year-old woman has had a new jaw put in.
I was going to cover that one, but you just stole it.
On his screen.
Nice. Yeah. And so you want to complete that then?
Yeah, it was made on a 3D printer.
Yes, and made of?
I was just looking for that fact. Something titanium, yes. Titanium with faux bone over the top of it, so they could buy it, you know, like attach it to tendons and stuff like that. It was lower on the comment. It's behind a paywall, but one of the commenters said that it was in the actual paper. But yeah, just imagine you get an infection in your jaw. They have to take it away, take your jaw away, and they give you a new jaw, which is
completely new jaw,
almost exactly like
as it's supposed to a piece jaw. Of the jaw. It's not just like a graft or some part. It's the entire jaw.
Except they said this jaw is a little. The artificial jaw is slightly heavier than a natural jaw, but the patient can get used to it.
Yeah.
They have a new jaw,
and in a boxing match, they'll definitely have an iron chin.
Oh God! But their teeth.
Yes, people have been making jokes about that too. She doesn't have a glass jaw anymore. So, at any rate, we've come to the end of Geek Speak. Geek Speak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence, and we thank the Puppet Master for its use. Geek Speak on KOSP, supported by Cruise.io Internet, offering commuters quiet drop-in space with a 10 gigabit fiber internet connection at 877 Cedar Street in downtown Santa Cruz. Information is at cruise.io.com. And Home and Small Business Tech, providing IT support to businesses and tech support for home computers. Home and Business Tech specializes in providing data and have been providing data storage, recovery, virtualization, and maintenance for over 10 years. HASBtech.com. Santa Cruz County Administrative Office Officer Susan Morello speaks about prison realignment at a luncheon sponsored by the League of Women Voters Sunday morning, February 12th, 11:30 at the Hilton Hotel in Scotts Valley. Reservations are required. More information at the League's calendar at lwvscc.org. 426-VOTE. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at kusp.org. With me in the air room were Ben Jaffe and Jordan Hart. Thank you for joining me.
Quite a pleasure.
You're welcome.
And coming up next is Car Talk.